For those of you that like to follow what is going on around the world, especially in the realm of geopolitics, you must have come to learn that Africa's most interesting duo to keep up with in terms of current events, that's Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, have formed a military coalition to sort of consider it as a, look at it in a way of, you know, look at it in a way that NATO operates, that in our club, if you attack one of us, we are all going to come for you. This is something that is pretty standard, as I've been told, to a group of guys that go around, that do this thing that I'm not very familiar with called chilling. So more often, I'm told what happens is that they go out in groups and they look, they look after each other. Whether you are totally wasted, you're too wasted to drunk, but you are too drunk to drive, not the other way around. Whether you are, you mistakenly, tripped and then splashed your drink on some muscular guy, they will all come and, try to defend you. Or maybe you are just, trying to, get the other gender to go with you at home. They will try to, someone will pop up and play wingman. That's the situation it turns out that they're dealing with. And if you are familiar, if you have familiarized yourself with the Eagle FM Facebook page, then you must have come across that story. Is that what we're here to talk about? Partly. But I'm here to talk about empires, because here on my 2 weeks morning show and another 2 weeks afternoon show called The Time Machine, my interest is more on history, because that's what we keep forgetting every time that we every time that we talk about things, and that's very important, if you ask me. It's very important to always ask why. It's a very important question. Why is a very important question if you want to take interest in geopolitics. If you just tuned in and you're wondering just what the heck is going on, this is Helmed with The Time Machine on Eagle FM, and I'm here until the hour of 10. What we are going to be doing is using history to prove several points that we are witnessing, especially in the world of geopolitics and geoeconomics, which, geoeconomics, and if you just had that very nice sound of a car. That's because some people are having a little bit of a good festive season. It's a good thing to do, as long as you just respect respect that it's a public road and there are other users that like life more than you do. We don't know what you are going through. And this time of the year, there are those of us that will go as much as to say, frankly, I don't care. I just want to, get drunk and have a good time. Not drinking and driving, of course. I don't do that. Like, literally don't. Now, for those of you that just tuned in, this is The Time Machine with Helmed, and I'm here until the hour of 10, and I love history and comedy, so I decided to combine both of them to prove why a lot of subjects that we talk about, especially in the world of geopolitics, We are constantly lying to each other. So let's talk about two things today: lying and imperial agendas. Empires have always been about control. Everything else is secondary. You know that whole thing of we'll give you this aid, we care about your security, all that is secondary. The most important part for any empire is control. Now, before you start saying, that makes sense, well, you're welcome. But before we get to the whole sense of it, let's first go through what is going on in East Africa now, shall we? Not the constant coups. That's a significant part of it. Now, according to yours truly, Eagle FM, Mali's military leader, General Assimi Goïta. Yeah. I'm sure if you ask the president, the people, you know, the people of Mali or Goita himself, he will tell you that he's the president. But let's stick with the military leader now, shall we? Military leader Assimi Goita presided over a ceremony marking a creation of a unified force for the three Sahel nations. Now, why is a military coalition, why is that important? Okay, here is one thing that no one talks about in the world of geopolitics, especially no one that is in the line of mainstream media in information dissemination in a more politically correct way. They don't talk about that. Now, unless you are listening to a very short and charming, very verbosity type, verbose, Kavango guy on Eagle FM this wonderful morning, chances are very high there are a lot of things about geopolitics that you are not going to be hear. You have to understand that in the world of geopolitics, control of information is very central. You see, you have to understand when Noam Chomsky pointed out that propaganda is to democracy what violence is to dictatorship, and he explains that by saying that, you know what, in a dictatorship, if you are a dictator, anyone that questions your narrative, you can just make them disappear. It's that easy. And then everyone that comes asking what happened to the guy that asked your narrative, you also make them disappear. By the time that you get to the third person that you make disappear, a lot of people would have gotten the message at this point that, you know what, don't ask that guy unless you want to disappear. That's very easy in a dictatorship world. But in a democratic world, you have to be subtle. In other words, you have to lie very creatively. Which now, if you're a comedian and that loves information, you look at that and you start drooling like this. The information becomes very juicy. Now, how do you lie creatively in a way that you don't risk a revolt? Easy. You have to start using words intentionally. Like, instead of saying we are bombing a country for its oil, for example, say the president is a narco-terrorist. You can't just tell the people that, you know what, my private company, my private company friends / campaign contributors want me to destabilize a certain part of the world so that they can have access to the country's natural resources. You can't tell that to your people. Are you kidding me? They are going to hate you for it. A chance are very high, come next election cycle, they're not going to vote for you. So you have to be creative. You have to tell them that country have weapons of mass destruction. We have just made up. Therefore, we'll just send in the army for democracy. By the way, we know there's one country that definitely have weapons of mass destruction. Now, we are not going to attack those ones because, well, we're not that stupid. Because, well, they literally have weapons of mass destruction. Chances of them using those weapons on us are really high. So we'll not risk that. We'll just pick a country that we know doesn't have weapons of mass destruction and then accuse them of having weapons of mass destruction, bomb the heck out of them, and then steal their resources. Actually, we are not stealing. We are liberating them from oppressive regime. Now, the language here becomes very central. Understand that? Language, very central. You know, during the British occupation of modern-day Kenya, the Mau Mau uprising was called the Mau Mau Rebellion. That's on purpose. Language here becomes very, 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 very important. It wasn't an... you want to bet that 10, 20, 30, 50 years from now, Hamas is going to be a freedom-fighting organization that fought for the liberation of Palestine? Look, I wouldn't be surprised if I'm alive 50 years from now and I'm reading that in a newspaper article. What do you mean? Well, here's the thing. Every liberation movement on the African continent was at some point a freedom fighting organization? No. It was a terrorist organization. Well, the language is very delicious. Did I just do that? But anyway, not that I'm trying to go full romantic with my microphone. That'd be disturbing. But anyway, back to East Africa. Let's stay focused on this one. The trio, aka the three countries, in this case, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, the nations formed a unified army in order to defend the newly formed regional alliance, the Alliance of the Sahel region. That's their, called it their military coalition. Like their version of NATO. You know, if you attack one, attack all. Now, you do realize that, China has a significantly large military capability and a strong military capability. Russia has a very strong military capability. The US has a very, very, very strong military capabilities. The EU has NATO, very strong military capabilities, except Africa. Well, take Western Europe, for example. This is a continent that has, they have resources, but they don't have the resources that Africa has. Africa is baptized in resources, but we don't have the military capabilities to protect these resources in a ways that they work, that these resources work for us. Why? It's because, see, again, Nalai. You see, the reason why I totally agree with this Sahel guys is because I'm one of those people that hold the point of view that if you really want to be free from being bullied, you may want to start going to the gym and exercising. Now, look at this on a national level. Look at the police as your international law. And then you look at your self-defense, you know, things like, you know, your wall fence and your wall fence and your electric fence on top as your own privatized defense mechanism. You know, because you know that the police are not going to be there watching your house all the time. You have to take matters in your own hands, legally, of course. Commercial break.
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Welcome back. Now, where was I? Totally agree with the Sahel guys. You need muscles to survive on this planet. Like, if you have ever heard of the quote for, I think that's coming out of evolution, that survival of the fittest and the need to eliminate the weak. Well, that's geopolitics. The global stage in case of geopolitics is a jungle. And by the way, the political world is a jungle. The corporate world is a jungle. It operates on the very raw form of human nature. Survival of the fittest. I know. Now, one gentleman pointed it out about a year ago in very, in more fluent English than I can be able to express it. The former Secretary of State, I believe the gentleman played during the Biden administration, Anthony Blinken. This is what he said.
If you're not at the table in the international system, you're going to be on the menu. So it was very important for us to re-engage multilaterally, and we've done that.
If you are not at the table, you're going to be on the menu. It's not rocket science. Like, thanks. Thank you very much, Mr. Blinken. In the world of geopolitics, on an international stage, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. Translation, if you want to protect if you don't want to be eaten, you may want to develop some type of defense mechanism. That's something wonderful to learn from nature. Each and every living organism has its own defense mechanism. Take human beings, for example. Those ones that are muscular, their defense mechanism is fighting. Those of us that are less muscular, our defense mechanism is running. Or hiding. Or a little bit of both. Minus the fighting, of course. Yeah, we don't do that. Running is much safer. Because some of us talk for a living, and to do that you need your teeth, and you can't really do much talking, at least not in a way that is easy for people to understand, if you are missing 32 of your teeth, depending on how severe the thing is, the beating was. Sometimes you have to learn when to fight and when to run. Now, there's someone that missed that, Jack Paul and Anthony Joshua. Those of you that watched the whole match, or just a video of, pictures that are now circulating on social media of Anthony Joshua smiling while he throws the punch that broke Jake Paul's lower jaw in two places. Homeboy was just smiling. You know how Zelensky was a comedian and decided to join politics and things didn't go well? Well, that's what happened to Jake Paul. He decided, he was going to move from being a YouTuber to boxing. It didn't end well. It did not end well. But anyway, let's come back to Africa now, shall we? Yes. Your jaw being broken in two places because, like, really? That's, what would you be thinking tomorrow if you had that, Helmut have stopped doing that, saying a bunch of funny things on Eagle FM, and now he wants to become a boxer, and he wants to challenge Harry Simon. I mean, you'll all go with, whatever he smoked, can I have some of it? Because clearly he's not sober. No, back to East Africa. On the trio's formation of their military coalition. The main objective of the unified army is to defend the region against Islamic insurgencies and other security threats. Have you ever wondered one thing about terrorists? That one, I think, former US Marine asked. When these guys get injured, where do they get their medication? How the heck do they procure their medicine? I wonder. Who is treating these guys? I mean, because being a terrorist, you have to understand that being shot is an occupational hazard. That means they get shot like all the time. We know who makes their cars. We are not going to mention any names. We're just going to mention the country, Kafkof, Japan. Now, we know who make their guns. We know who makes their guns. Most terrorist groups like one assault rifle, specifically one assault rifle. And one or two or maybe even more variants of the AK. Because that thing can shoot can operate in snow, can operate in the middle of the desert, in mud, sand, you name it. I'm telling you, the Russians nailed it on that one. No, so terrorism, it seems to me like if you want to buy high-end equipments, if you want to find out which equipments are of high quality, find out which equipments terrorists use. Because those guys are very good at shopping for quality. How they make their money to afford that, we are not going to ask that question because, well, we know they most likely steal most of it. So, when it comes to modes of transport, we know that terrorists go mostly with what? Land Cruiser. When it comes to guns, it's the AK, the Avtomat Kalashnikov. Oh, now that's a piece of work. So, back to Burkina Faso. The Burkinabe general, Dioda Traore, was appointed to head a 5,000 person force, which will remain in command, which will maintain a command base in Niamey, in Niger's capital. The ceremony in Bamako, the capital of Mali, was attended by the defense ministers of the Sahel Alliance states, diplomats, and as well as representatives of international organizations accredited to Mali. The three nations formed the Sahel Alliance after withdrawing from ECOWAS, which the alliance accuses of inhumane coup-related sanctions and working against the interests of citizens in the alliance countries. Look, I'm one of those people that maintain one thing. You can have all the resources, but if you don't have the army to protect the resources, that resources is not going to work for you. Let me explain why. It's simple, people. Have you noticed that any country that's at war, from DRC, Syria, Iraq, Mali, the part that is occupied by the military is the one with the natural resources. You still don't get the picture, do you? The army is not going to get into a country. When the US rolled into Iraq, you wanna bet which part was secured first? The one that has oil. The parts of Syria that was occupied before the fall of the Assad regime. The parts of Syria that was occupied by Western armed forces, you wanna guess. And also one that was riddled with military, with terrorist activities. It was the one with oil. And let's come to DRC now, shall we? Which part is more often mired in armed conflicts in DRC? It's more often the Katanga region. That's the richest part of DRC. It's more often, I swear, in every country that I look at, especially countries that have terrorist activities, it's the parts that have the country's natural resources. That's the part that has terrorist activities. Sudan. When the RSF went all trigger happy and went all bananas when it comes to basically causing all types of mayhem and chaos in the country, one of the parts they secured first was the part that has a significant agricultural project, if I can call it that, or farming projects of trees that produce what? Gum arabic and gold. Why? It's simple. Gum arabic is one of the primary ingredients in your soft drinks. And Pepsi and Coca-Cola likes that a lot. Well, how they're getting it, now we're not going to go there. And the UAE also was roped into that really quickly when it comes to gold and also arming the RSF. And the whole thing went to the International Court of Justice. The case was dismissed back in June. And then the rest is history. Military presence. You need an army. Clearly, you need an army. You need an army to protect your resource, whatever resource you have. Whatever resource you have, you need an army to protect it, otherwise someone is gonna come and take it. Welcome to the world of geopolitics, where we just use a lot of fancy language in mainstream media, but if you want the truth to be told, one that is basically one that everyone can see on the ground, but no one wants to talk about, get yourself a comedian. You're welcome. Now, what's some of the realities that that takes place in the world of geopolitics that no one wants to talk about except, not a lot of people, wants to talk about it. Political analysts that are considered somewhat controversial, like Noam Chomsky and Mearsheimer. How many people even listen to Ian Pappy anymore? I do, like, all the time. How many people listen to... I have one audio to bring in. But that will be after... I have one audio to basically play and then get it out of the way so that on the other side, I can just... un momento, si vous plaît. Always ask why. Welcome to the time machine with Elon. Now, what we're going to be using here is... We are going to dive into the history aspect of why I maintain that, one, we lie to each other a lot in geopolitics. We lie a lot. Two of the biggest lies told in the world of geopolitics is, one, the right to self-determination. Countries can do whatever they want. They can form alliance, be it political or economic alliance, with whoever they want. No, we can't. No, they can't. Countries cannot do that. They can't. I'll give you an example. Remember that time when Namibia had North Koreans here on construction projects? Remember what happened? They realized we had to send them packing like in 24 hours, right? Because someone said, you know what? About that whole self-determination thing, we know we say that, but not with those guys. Self-determination, the way that it's told in the mostly mainstream media is that self-determination is when countries are allowed to form alliance, political or economical, with whoever they choose, because it's their country, it's their national sovereignty, they can do that. No, they can't. They cannot. What that means is, now allow me to explain that jargon. What that means is, self-determination means countries, all countries, can form military, economic, or political alliance with countries that the big guys in the bloc approves them to make political, economic, or military alliance with. The ones that the big guys don't approve gets those tiny countries in hot soup. Again, case in point. Remember those construction projects that were supposed to be carried out all the way through by North Korean construction workers? What happened? Our North Korean companies. What happened? We had to send them packing because Big Bro said, yeah, you have the right to make your own political, economic, or military decisions, except when it comes to those guys. With those guys, you can't, so send them packing. It's like showing up at home as a kid with your friends, and, take for example, you sit around the table having dinner and your parents tell you, of course, sweetheart, you can have any type of friend you have. And then you bring back, you bring home one that is considered a bad influence. And your parents are like, well, honey, you know, when we say that you can have any type of friends you want, well, we didn't mean that guy, because clearly that guy seems like he's a bad influence on you. And by the way, parents, more often when you think that other kids are a bad influence on your kids, you want to guess who the HOD of that club is? Your son. He's the bad influence. I swear, most parents that worry that the friends, the child's friends are the bad influence on their kids are the executive. Are the ones in the executive branch of that friendship group. Just that sometimes, like they say, The Nile is the river, is a river in Egypt. So, who am I? Now, one, right to self-determination. That's one big fat lie. Well, here's the thing. It's not a big fat lie per se. It's a big fat lie and a big fat truth. Because even though you are told as a country that you have the right to self-determination, yes, you have. But under certain conditions, drawn and explained and executed by the big guys on the block. If you look at Ukraine, for example, is one country that is actually caught in the crossfire of that lie, of the right to self-determination. You can make alliance with anyone you want. No, you can't. Ukraine tried that. Ukraine is now on fire. Venezuela is headed there, but we're going to talk more about Venezuela tomorrow. And then we're going to talk about, the Vikings and Christmas rituals. That's on Christmas. But the point is, the right to self-determination is one big fat lie and one big fat truth. But a lot of people believe the big fat lie part of it. They don't see the big fat reality part of it. That big countries are always going to influence small countries in their political, economic, and military decisions. You can't just wake up and form a military alliance with North Korea. You want to guess what's going to happen to your economy? Well, newsflash, not something good. Let's leave it there. Now, don't worry, we are not planning on doing that anytime soon because we are not that suicidal. Thank you. And line number two, don't worry, international law will protect you. Yeah, tell that to South Sudan. Tell that to Sudan. Tell that to the Palestinian. Try, shall you? Tell that to the Rohingya Muslims and tell that to Syria. Tell that. There are a lot of people you can ask that. They will tell you, yeah. Well, international law works. It works. What you are doing as a country is in line with, again, what the big guys want. But if you are not in line with what the big guys want, international law is not going to protect you. Unfortunately, that's a reality. Welcome to the time machine. I love my, really love my job. So, now let's get into the history part of it, shall we? Over why you need an army. Over why I totally understand the Sahel guys. I understand the military coalition. Because I'm one of those proponents of, yeah, you need an army. You don't want an army. No, you need one. Ask the Chinese. The Chinese went through 100 years of humiliation because they were really trying to be nice by saying, you know what, guys, let's just talk these things out. This opium is addicting my population. It's negatively impacting my economy because, well, if 90% of my population is addicted to heavy drugs, that's my workforce down the drain. So can we just talk? The British and the French were like, well, do you have the army to defend your workforce? No. Well, in that case, then we'll just bulldoze you and then force you to sign a bunch of one-sided agreements and then force you to give us a territory of your country called Hong Kong for 100 years. Because you have to look on the others, you have to look on the bright side. Of course, there's a morality, there's international law, blah, blah, blah. But we have the army, you don't. So we'll bulldoze you because, well, you just can't fight us. And the Chinese were like, okay, so that's how these things work. So the Chinese decided to restrategize, and now they have an army. Now they can make whatever decision they want. Why? Because if someone threatens to fight them, they can fight back. Now, let's go back to the, you want to know why the Cold War was called? You want to know why the Cold War was called? Because both the Russian and the, you know, the Soviets at the time, both the Soviets and the U.S. Nuclear superpowers. If it wasn't for Nikita Khrushchev promising to deliver the Tsar bomber if the U.S. had tried something dumb, if it wasn't for that deterrence mechanism of the Tsar bomber, oh boy, the Soviets would have been bombed to smithereens. So, translation in the world of geopolitics, in the words of Anthony Blinken, if you are not at the table, you are on the menu. Translation, if you don't have an army, you become, how can I put this in a language that is more diplomatic? You are going to be described as, I'm looking for the politically correct word. You're going to be an idiot. Sorry, I tried. My government school English ran out of data. So now I'm just here to point out one thing. But more of the history gist on the other side of why you need an army if you want to benefit from your resources. Not an army that can barely finish 10 push-up. Like you literally need an army. Now, there's one thing we keep forgetting about the history of, you know, of apartheid South Africa. You do realize South Africa, apartheid South Africa, perfected the art of private military contracting. Executive outcomes is one of the first and one of the most top-notch, top-tier private military contractors. Because those guys basically solved, actually before the UN came in and reversed everything, those guys, executive outcomes, perfected the art of private military contracting to the point where they were subcontracted by the then Sierra Leonean government to help them deal with their own terrorist organization that they were dealing with. They worked with it. In a span of about 3 to 6 months, executive outcomes have bombed the Sierra Leonean rebels into submission to the point where they signed a peace agreement with the Sierra Leonean government. In about 6 months, part of the peace agreement was for the government, dumb enough if you ask me, to actually terminate the agreement with the executive outcomes. So the Sierra Leonean government at that time decided to say, you know what, actually, if this is going to bring peace at home, we are going to sign that agreement. It's just like you saying that it's your fault, everything is going wrong around the house, because you want peace to reign. Especially in conversation with Madame. Now, after executive outcomes left Sierra Leone, this was in the early 90s. After executive outcomes left Sierra Leone, peacekeepers from the UN came in. They had no clue what jungle warfare is. That's an African thing. Now, executive outcomes, these guys are, I think they still are, I'm not sure if they're in operation anymore. These guys mastered the art of jungle warfare. The peacekeepers that were brought in after executive outcomes had already done all the dirty work had no experience in jungle warfare, and they were annihilated by the terrorist organization when it came back after executive outcome had left. These guys, they killed a lot of civilians in Sierra Leone. That Sierra Leonean government at the time, they were really dumb, like really dumb. You're telling me someone that have been beating you behind the whole time is telling you that the guy that came to help you kick their behind back must go for them to reach a peace deal with you. Like really? Believe it or not, someone with probably a PhD and 3 masters and went to Harvard thought that was a brilliant idea for some reason. So, why you need an army if you want to benefit from your resources. It's because if you don't, someone that doesn't have resources but they have an army, they are going to come and take it. That's the reality on the ground. And the right to self-determination, nalai. 50% nalai. 50% na true. Regardless, 50% nalai. And then you have international law. Basically, the right to self-determination is emanating from international law. So, potato, potato. Now, why is it important to ask why in the world of geopolitics? That's what we are set to find out on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuana onongeshefa yapumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado inawa.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know, you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
Ipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune udo, o tukwetira o special ange. Tashia kengejefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ujendife nawa. Nukumona oijamwiri nawa. Ninge kwata fanona. Monika ko Eagle FM. Konora etatu imwe bali heali. Nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa. Nora etatu natu. Bali o etatu watatu. Oma filane Eagle FM. The eye.
Welcome back. It seems to me like this whole time I've been saying East Africa. It's not East Africa. It's actually West Africa. I'm here confusing my left from my right. Thank you very much, Menangela. Now, moving on. Why is it important to ask why? Why is it important to ask why? Now, you see, for those of you that have been following news headlines, back in June, when Israel and Iran decided to exchange greetings in a form of very unconventional fireworks, what happened is there was a discussion that was held on CNN on trying to understand why. Why do, for example, Iranians? Why are Iranians not very huge fan of Americans? Now, I'm about to have a good time. I'm not complaining. I'm about to have a good time. Two men had to be educated by a woman. Woman power. Go, girl power. Had to be educated by a woman to be, you know, to start thinking outside the box. Now, these are old adults. From the video I saw, one of the guys has a beard, which is white. That means the guy's white, but the beard is a little extra white, indicating that, he's old enough to remember to put on his clothes to leave the house. That means he's an adult. He should have, only, if he all he had to do was pick a history book, and he would have understood a lot of things. Now, you have to understand that a lot of things changed in the corporate world, which is why I don't I totally understand why a lot of people don't read I don't understand why a lot of people don't understand where these things are coming from. Because a lot of companies have changed the names. Take, for example, Anglo-Iranian Oil is now British Petroleum. Standard Oil is now ExxonMobil. So these guys just shifted a bit in terms of naming, but their method of operation is pretty much the same, aside with politicians and give them a lot of money so that they can lobby for their interest overseas. There's nothing illegal about that. It's not illegal. Take, for example, Namibia going to Nigeria, the Namibian government are sending representatives to Nigeria to go and try to create a market for Shilongo leather, for example. That's geopolitics or geoeconomics 101. But if you are bombing the heck out of people, if they, when they say no to selling you or buying your stuff, now that's where we start going, okay, that's diabolical. I mean, you have the military power, but still diabolical. Now, why am I bringing up the Israel-Iran exchange greetings in form of unconventional fireworks? Again, just don't lose focus here. The point is, why is military very important? Why is military investments very important in terms of sovereignty? Why is it important? It's simple. For one, it's because every superpower always had an army. You can't be a superpower without an army. You're going to have power, but not very super. To be a superpower, you need an army. Why? What is a superpower? That is the key discussion for today, and I cannot wait to get there. And I decided to use British sources on this one because, well, they're just my favorite. This is like, I'm using their sources to cook them, so it's more fun for me. So let's take a listen to this audio. Now, you're going to be listening, you're going to be hearing a bunch of voices, but I want you to focus on one voice of a lady that's asking the question, why? The name, the lady's name is, she's a journalist, used to work for CNN, I believe. They let her go. That's what they call firing these days. I'm not sure why, the reasons why maybe she left her off on her own or she was fired. Now, I don't care. I don't know. And frankly, I don't care. But the points she made in this audio, please take a listen.
Why did the Iran hostage crisis take place?
Fundamentalist radicals took over.
Yes. Why did the Iranian hostage situation take place? Now, in the 1970s, during the Iranian Revolution, a group of students. Before you start asking questions, you have to understand that Iran and the U.S. had for about 20 years a very good relationships. That was more often, at least in the eyes of a lot of Iranian people, one-sided in terms of benefits. It was one-sided in a sense that it pissed off a lot of Iranians, especially college students, that one day in the 70s, they just decided to storm. We're going to get into the details, after the audio. To storm the American embassy. Yes, the American had an embassy in Tehran, which is the capital city of Iran. Now it has been converted, I'm told, into a museum of surveillance history. Because after the students stormed the embassy, they found a lot of what the Iranians like to describe, or what they found to be surveillance material. Translation, they found out that they were being spied on. Now, that's not a secret, by the way. That's not a secret. Every smart country knows that embassies are used by different countries to spy on each other. It's an open secret. oh no, it's a diplomatic settlement. No, it's not. It's not. It's about stealing information from each other. Everyone knows that. If you didn't know that about your politics, you're welcome. But then again, what are you doing with your life? Embassies are there to steal each other's secrets. Look at it like you and your neighbor. You know, someone asked that, it was a meme, that how come that every time thieves break in my house, my neighbors don't see the thieves. But as soon as my wife leaves and I bring another woman into that house, then all of a sudden, all my neighbors are there. They are at home. They're all facing my house all of a sudden. Why does that keep happening? Well, that's your politics 101. Embassies are there so countries can spy on each other. They don't like to tell each other that because, well, it would ruin the je ne sais quoi of diplomacy, but embassies are just that. That's what embassies do. And also, all countries on this planet know that they spy on each other. It doesn't matter how good their relationship is, they spy on each other. It's a very toxic relationship that countries have. No wonder they're often described. Oh, no wonder when it comes to gender classification, countries are known as she. Hey, ladies, that one is not on me. But moving on. Why did the Iranian hostage situation take place? Oh, wait. In 1979, a bunch of students stormed the American embassy and take hostage. Iranians stormed the American embassy and take, a lot of staff hostage, a lot of staff members of that embassy hostage for about a year. There were a lot of negotiations that were basically carried out and then they eventually be released. Why did that take place? That's the question that a very wonderful journalist, Joy Reads, is asking. Her name is Joy Reads. That's what she's asking. And then you have a bunch of idiots that are supposed to be representing my gender saying some of the dumbest things in response to that question. Why did the Iran hostage situation take place? Listen to these idiots.
The government who
Why?
The West.
Why did they take over the West? Why?
Because they
hate the West. Now, Joy Reads keeps going. Why? They hate the West. Yes, that's as obvious as the sun being, the sun being in the sky, in the middle of a clear sky. Very clear day. Sun in the afternoon. You're telling me there is the sun. Why? Okay. Why did the Iranian hostage situation take place? Because they hate the West. Now, why did they hate the West? Always ask why. Let's get to the answer now, shall we?
They're religious jihadis who want to eliminate Western society.
Yes, religious jihadists want to eliminate Western society. Now, see, that's lie number one. That guy have never read history books. Have never. He's very good. I don't know how he ended up on that panel, because if you are going to talk about Iran, you may want to know the history. If you are going to talk about the history of the relationship between the U.S. and Iran, you may want to first read about the history of the relationship between Iran and the U.S. The fact that he was sitting on that panel without knowing that history makes me, as a comedian, think to myself as, actually, I'm more qualified than that guy to actually sit on that panel. Now, he's not dumb, don't get me wrong. Those are the people that speak from a point of, instead of using their brain, they are using their shut-up money to think and respond. But let's keep going. Why did this quote-unquote Islamic jihadist hate the Western way of life? Why? Let's keep going.
Our way of life.
They hate our way of life. Why? Why? You are not answering the question. Why?
Or they.
And then she now just picks a history books and then just gives them a crash course. History crash course. Take a listen now, shall we?
Overthrew the Shah of Iran, who we imposed on Iran because the Dulles brothers, one at the CIA and one at the State Department, decided that the oil beneath the soil of Iran belonged to BP and belonged to us. And when Mossadegh, who was the leader of Iran, the democratically elected leader of Iran, said that we would like to audit BP because we want to know if you are cheating us or paying the people of Iran based on the oil under their soil. And they said, you may not audit us. And then we overthrew him and he wound up dying in prison because we decided that we, in our arrogance as a country, got to own their oil. And wait a minute, no, one moment. And so the hatred of the United States had to do with the hatred of the Shah, who brutally repressed the people of Iran for 26 years until he was overthrown within Iran because he was not their natural king. They didn't want a king any more than we wanted a king. The bottom line is the arrogance of the United States' foreign policy. We act as if people act in a vacuum and that nothing we do has ever led to the hatred of us in other countries.
Oh, now, I'm well aware that I'm cooking the U.S. a lot here, but I'm going to get to the point why, because I still have like an hour and 32 minutes. That's how much time I have. Oh, did I forget? The 0832888401, 0832888401, that's the line, because I can go on like the whole day. I have 5 sisters, believe me. I was well-trained. I've been training for this job ever since I became a firstborn, and then sister one came along, sister two, sister three. By sister four, well, I mean, I could talk the whole day. But, so, what, now, that was on a live stream on CNN. Now, but if you find the, if you find like, the live stream video of that, you know, that was uploaded, more like for permanent safekeeping on their YouTube channel, on the CNN YouTube channel, that piece was cut out, interesting enough, which is my favorite part. It was cut out. You see, control information, very important. Let's take a commercial break. I will explain more on the other side.
Omarandisiro wehira kamwaha. Yanje ombango batule bana mibyo tukondwa tokolo mbanda inga omachibisiro omana hepero chinene okula ko ministry otutu ngono bikunwa omibano matuni no wehi alikane pulatene na wa numuhana sane ombulenji ko nepo wetu nduroye obarara nganda no mapanga omena rashike omena rakusha omahiwo kolo mbanda mo Namibia omahiwo holo mende nuka yesokura ndisiwa munga mwa omano auhe okukara no rupa munga mwa omanguliro ngasha mano marandisiro po omarandiro omahi ochina chichiri penje oveta oveta yomatuni no mahi wa kolo mbanda oveta oisha tano yombura inji onayewali na mbali isha era ouka hu onga no lonjito ohamkwa na indo omberero yomarandisiro omahi penje oveta olomberero loko shiveta ovakatu ke oveta mapea avehunga mwa iyo olomberero lokufuta ochimariva po omberero yokukara mondeko ondombero yongaro ombwa yoshiwana okulandisa po okulanda ehiro kolo mbanda malire ochinashima chitwara kolonjaka halo mahi nomba meno mokatiko biwana vyetu muhepa okushuwa shike ehiro kolo mbanda ehiretu atuhe oro omahaneno woburo yetu jima iso kuyeta ombwiro komundu auhe okutila obiruma twa vyetu kehiyo mwano wakutenga ehiretu rokolo mbanda etemonao tuyanja ondenge rokondenguyo mbalu yetu nokushevera olondendera letu chivisa obishitwa vyopenje oveta chuno mahaka wangamwa omaunguliro wopenje oveta alikana chivisa omahakango kouhona pare ombalu ochirata shomahi wakamuha po kombero yo ministri njiri popedu noruko ndwaroye katungule pamwe okushevera olombulo letu rokolo mbanda na todontito na la muhuka o ministri kaina kukara no mediria wangamwa ombanjarero yolomburo dehi duma de twa iyo marandisiro wa mahi wokolo mbanda penje oveta lemburuka kusha ehiro kolo mbanda ochina ochihude gatuli tideke hiongaro ombwa nunji nongulikiro kubandu abehe okuhepa koma unguliro wakumwe ombude yorati yonji yadikamisiwa pamwe no batulo shimariwa okulako horomende ya Namibia no horomende yehiro bando ishi okupitira mombanga yomekulisiro yehiro bando ishi konjuisiro yoko murungu alikana hakaena kweno mbira yorupa roma unguliro wakumwe kweno shiwana mo ministri yotutu ngono yikunwa omeba no matuni no wehi po kongole no mora ingi onora ohambo umwe oimwe ombali onora ohambo ndatu ohambo mbali ohambo umwe ombali no muri.
My
my friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So, where are we? Always ask why. Yes, the Iranians hate us. But why do they hate us? Well, because they hate our way of life. Again, why? Well, they want to, you know, they want to threaten our Western way of life. Really? Western way of life? Which one? The one with a crack? Who'd want to hate a life like that? Okay, actually, it would be a good reason to actually hate, you know, life like that. But, the point is, politics is not actually told in a way that it should. Because if it was told in the way that it, you know, that it should, a lot of people in a lot of countries, especially a lot of powerful countries, they would not support their governments. Now, one excellent example I can use is Dave Chappelle had a show in Saudi Arabia, I think it was about a month or two ago. And when he went back to the U.S., one of his fellow comedian men, Bilma, made fun of him by saying that, Dave Chappelle, how can you go and do a show in Saudi Arabia? Those guys have human rights issues, and they even killed a journalist in a very brutal way. And Bilma was now talking about that in reference to the late Jamal Khashoggi, who went into the Saudi consulate in Turkey and then was never heard from or seen again. Like the man died. Like the worst part of his death is that when he walked in that consulate, he walked in there to sort of like to process his marriage paperwork. He had just proposed to his wife at the time, to his wife to be, and he left his bride to be outside the consulate when he walked in there, never to walk out again. So you can totally understand Bill Maher's criticism of Dave Chappelle on this one. So first of all, picking a fight with Dave Chappelle was a very damp idea for Bilma, which reminds me of the boxing match between Anthony Joshua and Jake Paul, except in the comedy realm. That's basically what happened. So Dave Chappelle clapped back by saying, okay, Bilma, what are your take on Israel? Because last time I checked, they killed over 100 journalists by now. Are we still counting? And oh boy, as you can imagine, that went viral really fast. Really fast. And it's still going viral. Because, in the Western world, criticizing Israel. I said in the Western world intentionally, because believe me, Israeli citizens themselves criticize their government. Israeli citizens in Israel, Which is why every time that I read something on Israel, when I read something on Israel, I read Haaretz. Or the Jerusalem Times. I read, newspapers or news from platforms that are based in Israel. Because news platforms that are based in the West outside Israel, my God, those guys can lie. Those guys can lie for Israel more than Israel lies for itself. It's about the money. You don't have to beat around the bush. You know, give a man enough money, he will lie about anything. So that's the comedy war that's going on. But now coming back to again why you need an army. You see, let's start with the Iran hostage situation. Iran hostage crisis, the internal crisis that took place in 1979 and 1981, which militants in Iran, they're not militants, they were just trying to take their country back. Again, watch the language. Now, militants in Iran, 66 American citizens at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and held 52 of them hostage for more than a year. Well, at least they fed them for more than a year. Now, the crisis which took place during the chaotic aftermath of the Iranian Islamic Revolution 1978-1979. Now, before you get to the situation, ask yourself one question. Why did the revolution take place? Well, that takes us back to the 1950s. The resources, it's always about resources. It's always about resources, which is why I said, if you want to protect your resources, you need an army. Otherwise, the guys that don't have the resources with an army are going to come and take that resources. And they are not going to ask. They are not going. Okay, first they will ask. When you say no, then they will start calling you a dictator. They will start accusing you of having weapons of mass destruction. You know the whole nine yards. So, what led to the revolution? 1950, Iran goes for elections. They vote into office a guy called Mohammad Mossadegh. Mohammad Mossadegh decides, you know what, we are going to nationalize our natural resources so that it can benefit our people. Very innocent, right? What's wrong? You know that whole right to self-determination that I pointed out earlier. You'd think it applies here, international law, right? The right to self-determination, right? As a country, as a leader, I can decide that my resources must benefit my people. Therefore, I will nationalize it. That's what Mohammad Mossadegh did. Except, who were controlling the resources at the time, the British. Of course, the British will always pop up. And, there was a company at the time that was known before as Anglo-Persian Oil. Because you have to understand that, the most dominant language and also official language of Iran is not Arabic. It's Persian. And before it was Iran, it was Persia, part of the greater Persian Empire, if you like, reading history. Now, what that led to was that, what they switched from Anglo-Persian oil, not Asian, Anglo-Persian oil to Anglo-Iranian oil, now they are known as British Petroleum. I like the change in camouflage, but still same WhatsApp group. But anyway, one thing that you see here, one thing that you see here is that it wasn't until, when was that? Was that 2013? When at least the CIA admitted that actually we played a role in overthrowing that guy for private interest sake. It had nothing to do with democracy. I mean, the whole thing was just a bunch of crap. And the guy was not a dictator anyway. We just lied about all that so we can give our private sector friends access to the country's oil. It's not rocket science. But that was about, over 60 years after the event. Then so we're like, oh yeah, we did that. Can you imagine what happened to you if you pointed that out, 5 years after that event? You were called all kinds of names. I mean, if it was today, they would call you an anti-Semite. I don't know what they called you back then. So, 1950, election is held. President comes to power who won the election because they were voted in by the people. Hamid Musadek decides to nationalize, and BP is like, ha, yeah. Actually, I wouldn't do that if I were you. Mohamed Musadiq is like, what are you going to do? It's my country. According to the right to self-determination, I can decide what to do with the resources in my country. And BP is like, well, that's how it's written on paper. But the practice is somewhat different. The practice involves me, you know, smearing your name into bad reputation and then causing your own people to overthrow you. And then I will take one power-hungry idiot amongst your population and then put them in office. And that's exactly what they did in 1953. They got rid of Mohamed Mossadegh by the, you know, they created a joint venture between the CIA and the MI5, which is British intelligence. They overthrew Mohamed Mossadegh and then installed in the Shah, a.k.a. Pahlavi Mohamed. Now, that guy was like Mobutu Seseko after the overthrow of Patrice Lumumba, was a went full dictatorship mode from day one. And it, over 20 years. Now, here's the thing. If you go to any country that is at peace right now, including Namibia, and you overthrow their democratically elected president who wants to take care of them, and then you pick a power-hungry puppet amongst that population, and then you tell them that just rule with an iron fist, and they kill, torture, and maim people from their own population, those people are going to hate that leader and you that installed that leader into position. You can't hate them for that. Actually, you can't blame them for that. Now, after 20-plus years of dictatorship, you can actually understand why a lot of Iranians hate the guts out of Americans. And the painful thing is the hate more often spills over to citizens who didn't know, had nothing to do with it. The point is simple. If you go to a foreign country and get rid of a country, you know, of a leader that wants to take care of the people, who is loved and voted by the people, you get rid of that one and then put in a leader who actually the people not only hates, but also the leader who oppresses the people so they can hate the leader even more. Well, guess what the people are going to do? As soon as they find out they installed that leader into position, they're going to hate that leader plus you. It's not rocket science. You don't have to be a psychologist to figure that out. All you just have to do is use common sense. But then what did we point out yesterday? Common sense and politics, when a lot of money is involved, which is what oil is more often about, no pun intended, is common sense is about, is like oil and water when money is involved. Especially when a lot of money, a lot of oil money is involved. So, that brings us to the, now, that brings us to, why? Why does America keep doing this? Well, at first I thought the answer to that question was complicated. No, it's not. It's a very simple one. It's what empires do. Duh. You can't be an empire by being nice. To be an empire, you have got to learn how to do two most important things. Steal and lie. Actually, lie first and then steal. In that order. Weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That's the lie. And then you steal the oil. Nicolas Maduro is a narco terrorist. And then you steal the oil. You know. We are going to take democracy in that country because their leader is the human rights violator. Then you steal the resources. That's what empires do. Before you start saying, oh no, because, I mean, this is just an America. It's not an America thing. It's an imperial thing. The British did it. Let's go and civilize those savages. Then they stole Oh boy, did they steal everything. I'm telling you, the British stole. The British are actually worse than the Americans. The Americans are stealing just the resources nowadays. They're just stealing resources. The British stole everything, including the people of those, the British stole the land, the resources, the people. The British stole everything. They stole art. They stole art. Those are the British. When they were an empire. Now what, how, okay, when the Spanish were the empire back in the, you know, back in the 1500s, after the fall of the Portuguese from the, you know, from Greece, from the imperial Greece. Well, the Spanish did the same thing. They were like, you know what? We are going to South America to civilize. You know, in the name of Christianity, let's go and convert them. Actually, Catholicism. But let's go and convert them. Did they really? Did they go there really for religious reasons? Because last time I checked, the religion they went there with, the religion they were spreading, both the British, the Portuguese, the British, and the Spanish, the religion they were spreading has this thing called Ten Commandments. Now, one of it says, thou shalt not kill, and boy, did they all kill. Thou shalt not steal. They broke that one too. Thou shalt not covet. Oh, actually, that's what they led to them breaking. That's what led to them breaking the first two. Thou shalt not bear false witness. They also did a lot of lying, torture. You name it. Step one: as empires from Romans, the Greeks, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the British. Step one, lie. Step two, steal. That's how empires are made. Unfortunately, there are no other two ways of going about it. If you want to be an empire, Namibia, forget all this nonsense that everyone is telling you. Green hydrogen investment, oil and gas, diplomatic relations. You know, what's that one lie that we tell ourselves all the time? A friend to all and an enemy to none. Come on, serious. Be serious here. If you want to be an empire as a country, all you just have to do is read the history of all empires. Let's start with the American Empire, the British Empire. It's what empires do. They first lie and then steal. And then build. And then call themselves liberators. The US like to say they are spreading democracy. Are they though? Are they? Have you seen the democracy in Syria? Have you seen the democracy in Afghanistan? Have you seen the democracy in Iraq? And by the way, this year, the Iraqi Prime Minister of Natural Resources, which I think includes oil, just gave, a bunch of, oil tenders to American private companies. You see, that's how you become an empire, people. That's how you become an empire. You don't become an empire by being nice. Like they say, in the history of every rich family, if you read the history of their family, somewhere there, it all started with a thief. 90% of the time, that's what you're going to find. It all started with a thief. I'm yet to read the history of an empire that started with this empire. Just grew up because the king or the emperor was just moving from one country to another saying, can I please have your resources? So please, so that I can build my country, please. Can I please enslave some of your people so they can help me build? They can be part of my free labor, please. No. Again, the thing is, if you sit in the class and most likely do political science, that's what they're going to teach you. And then you read history books and you find that if you want to be an empire, you may want to practice how to do two things. Lie and then steal. Although, you know, killing is a part of it. You know, it's a part of the game. But lie and then steal. But what is an empire? Well, I'm here to walk you through it. What is an empire? You know what's my favorite part? You know what's my favorite part? Every time that the US does something stupid, which is like 90% of the time in geopolitical, or, you know, on a epic geopolitical scale,
I find a lot of people going, oh, why can't we just, you know, why does everyone have to listen to the, you know, why does everyone have to listen to the U.S., who made them the police of the world? Actually, we did. We made them the police of the world. You know how we did that? Because we are terrible at contributing at financial wise to international institutions that are supposed to maintain world order, like the UN. You want to know who is the biggest contributor economically to the UN in both their regular budget and peacekeeping budget? The US. A lot of countries, especially those ones that are just making noise at the UN General Assembly level, we also want power, we also want a seat at the UN, at the UN Security Council. Find out how much they are contributing to the UN. Find out how much. You're going to laugh your lungs out. Most of them are Africans. So we want power without paying for it. That's us. I'm so proud of us. Actually, we are a little too nice as Africans. Don't get me wrong. I like that. But it turns out the world of geopolitics does not... In the world of geopolitics, is not very different from the world of dating. Nice guys finish last. Yeah, well, I'm nice. I didn't finish last. My girlfriend is really hot. I know. So I give myself a lot of credit for eating a lot of carrots. So, in the world of geopolitics, the world of geopolitics is like the world of dating. Nice guys finish last. Speaking of which, ladies, I have one question that was asked by one total stranger on social media. You know, there was this time when people were changing their social media profile pictures to purple in protest of domestic violence, which was a very noble thing to do. But someone asked one very controversial question with regards to that discussion. How come that abusive men always have something to abuse? Have you noticed that there's never a time when they're single? They always have a girlfriend. They always have a wife. They always have someone to abuse. And then you have a nice guy who is single like 90% of the time. That's problem number one with the society. You know what? We don't want to talk about that. We don't want to talk about that. Every time, you know, if you want to piss a feminist off, ask them that question. It's a genuine question, though. A very funny one, but also very interesting one. How come abusive men always have someone to abuse? How come they are never single? Like you'd think because they are abusive, they would be single like most of the time. No, nope. Because there is a lot of "I will change him" out there. And you wonder why the statistics are going through the roof. Yeah, and also one South African lady decided to fuel that anger during that same period of that same period when people were changing their profile pictures to purple. How did she fuel that? She made a video. Her exact words were, "Nice guys, Barbara. Nice guys are boring." I'm like, aha! There's your answer. The most painful thing is, there are real victims out there of domestic abuse. And it's women like that keep saying things like nice guys, Barbara. Now, to be fair, nice guys are boring. If you are going to be in a relationship with me, you will have to understand that clubbing is not my thing. If you are the groove type, relationship with Helmut is not going to work out. Because I'm going to be sleeping and playing video games like 90% of the time. On the bright side, when you call my phone and it's not going through, when you finally show up at my place and find that I have my giant headphones on and, you know, talking to my friends about providing them sniper cover, I'd be like, okay, well, on the bright side, he didn't cheat.
And on the not very bright side, I'm still going to kill him because he didn't pick up my calls. But anyway, geopolitics and how it's very similar to, you know, how geopolitics is similar to, you know, to dating in a way that nice guys finish last. We want power that we don't want to pay for. In 2024, where's that very nice table of the UN contribution? UN contributions. Revenue by government donors. This is now this is on the UN's own website. Chief Executive Board website. You know, Chief Executive Board. What does it say? Well, something very nice. All government donors, total amount $46 billion. Yo, 46 billion, let me Jacob Zuma this one. 46,672,577,622. Nailed it. Now, government donors, the United States contributed 14,265,536,245. That is in U.S. dollars in 2024. That's how much the U.N. That's how much the U.S. contributed to the U.N. That's how much money. United States came, you know, in 2024, you know, donations to the U.N. United States came up with a 14 billion, donation. Germany came second with 4.7, so it's 5 billion. The United Kingdom, the UN came in with basically Great Britain, came in with 3 billion. China, 2 billion. Japan, 2 billion. Canada, 1.7 billion, make that 2 billion. France, 1.4 billion. Republic of Korea, that's South Korea, with 1.2 billion. Norway, 1.2 billion. Italy, 1.1 billion. Others, Africa, 12 billion others. That's not something to be proud of. This part of others are the ones that want to be on a National Security Council, but they are in the category of others. Now, picture this. This year, the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres came out and when he gave like the first when he revealed the first regular budget for the 2026 for UN's 2026 regular budget, he did point out several things. That one, they will have to if other countries don't contribute their dues like the UN because it was holding back. Which is one of the, you know, actually the biggest contributor. The U.S. in 2024 alone contributed to WFP, UNHCR, UNDPO, IOM, UNICEF, UN, WHO, FAO, that's a Food Agriculture Organization, UNDP, United Nations Development Programs, UNFPA, and others. The U.S. is contributing to all that. But the largest chunk of the U.S. contribution is to World Food Programs. And they also contribute a huge of it to UNHCR, the Refugees Agency of the UN. And we're still in the category of others, but we want power. So, in case you are wondering, why can't the UN just kick the US the US out of the UN because it keeps breaking international law? Well, because it's bringing the biggest check. You're welcome.
again. This is one of the reasons why I like my job. It's because, see, I get to point out things that a lot of people are too, well, professional to point out. Too professional. Still too professional.
And when you look at the 2023, the US contributed $12 billion. Germany contributed $5 billion. Germany really downscaled their budget from 2023 to 2024. Japan, $2 billion. China, $2 billion. UK, Great Britain, $2 billion. Netherlands, that's 2023. And you can follow that list. And the UN website now on this is, is well tabulated. It's well tabulated or well, the pictograph is really awesome. In 2022, the US contributed $18 billion. Germany contributed $6 billion. Japan, $2 billion. Great Britain, $2 billion. China, $2 billion. Canada, $2 billion. Now, how about 2021? 2021, the US has been topping the list of the biggest donor to the UN. Picture this. You know that member of the family who contributes the most to the family, and now they feel like they are above the law? Well, because they are. And you have Namibians that are very rich, that they can drive anyhow. They don't care about fines anymore, because it's either that or they know a guy who knows a guy, who knows a guy who is very powerful. Well, if you want to wield power, contribute. For you to contribute, you must make money. For you to make money, you need resources. For Africa is not a problem. We have the resources. Now, why are we not using it? Because it's not in our control. Who is controlling it? Mostly countries that don't have the resources, but they have the military to come and take the resources. My favorite part, DRC and Rwanda. You see, that's my favorite part because the thing is, this is something that's more often just attributed to the US. Oh, come on, guys, don't give them all the credit. This is an imperial thing. Superpowers, aka empires, just do two things: lie and steal. And more lies and more stealing and more lies and more stealing. You get the picture. Again, I'm yet to read a history of a country that acquired or attained imperial status by being nice. Look, I'm not a huge fan of war, but you have to look at the reality on the table here. You can't, there are no two ways of looking at it. What the US is doing is not new. It's just that we have the internet now, so we can read about it. But that's what empires do. Empires don't like competition when they are stealing, which is why every time they steal, they redefine the word stealing so that only they can steal. When everyone else does the same thing, it's called stealing. When they do it, it's called aid, development, or helping poor countries. Now, let me explain something to you. When Spain was a superpower, right? Back in the 1500s, they dominated. That's the reason why a lot of South American countries have Spanish as an official language. That's not their official language. That's not their official language. Spain, when it was a superpower, dominated South America. You know what happened? England had to resort, this was during Queen Elizabeth I, to resort to using privateers, aka pirates, to steal
silver from Spanish ships. Why? Because even England was not allowed to operate in South America. Why? Because Spain was a superpower. Spain was already stealing resources out of South America, and they redefined stealing so that only they can steal the resources, legally, of course. It's legally for them to steal, but anyone else, when everyone else did it, it was illegal. It was piracy when the English were doing it. When the Spanish were doing it, it was, you know, it wasn't piracy. It was, I don't know what they called it, but I'm sure they found a fancy name for it. So, right? See? Which is why nothing have actually changed. When Russia started bombing Ukraine, FIFA called it an invasion. And then Israel started bombing Gaza. They're like, well, we are not going to ban them out of FIFA because we don't want to get involved into politics. In fact, we will use soccer to bring the world together in peace. I'm like, huh? On the same FIFA website, you know what it says about Russia and Ukraine? We will side with Ukraine by banning Russia out of these competitions. Listen to me. If you want to be an empire, Namibia, forget all the investment crap that they are telling you. I don't care where it's coming from. Step one, build an army. Which, if you ask me, the West African guys, the Sahel guys, you may disagree on the way they are going about it, but building an army is a great start. Saying as a blith maneer does not work well on an international stage. As a blith maneer, okay, my Afrikaans data is depleted, but you get the point. As a blith maneer or as a blith yefro does not work on an international national stage, you have got to develop muscles or you're going to be bulldozed into a lot of decisions. Again, 100 years of humiliation. It was through those very one-sided negotiations. Now, what type of negotiations do you think, how fair do you think is a negotiation going to be if I have a gun and you have a stick? Who do you think is going to, who do you think at the end of those negotiations are going to benefit the most? If I have a gun and you have a stick, oh, I'm calling the shots. That was China. During the whole agreements that they signed, something called there's a specific word for it, of Nanjing. They lost Hong Kong. Why? It's because the British and the French had this enormous military power that China could not compete with. They had no choice but to basically sign a bunch of agreements that was disadvantaging them and would advantage them for literally 100 years. And China was like, okay. From the look of things, this world does not work well with as a blith maneer. Can I cray some of your resources? This world work with exalio cray type of mentality. You see, if you want your country to be a superpower, have Tura boys in executive office. Because Tura boys, when they run into you with your phone, with your iPhone, they don't say, as a blith, no. Okay, maybe they say as a blith, but it's mostly sarcasm. You all know that they don't really mean the as a blith part of it. They are just, they're like, hear me. Don't ask how I know that part. Okay. No, you can't ask. Very long and painful story. Hear me. Why? When they're saying, hear me, like, I swear, excellent. If you want to liberate Africa, put Tura boys in power. Because when they're saying, hear me, to your iPhone, they have an Okapi on one hand. Because they know that if hear me doesn't work, Okapi will definitely get the job done. Not a career advice, of course. But that's, oh my God, I can't believe I beat that. I missed that. It turns out, Tura boys, Natura Boys is a miniaturized version of how empires operate. They say, hear me with one hand, and say, exile your stick with one hand. Because the right hand is saying, hear me. But they have plan B. The hear me, that's plan A. Hear me is plan A. If plan A, if you say near, plan B, exile your stick, will come in handy. At this point will be, exile your stick is very convincing. It will make you hand over, you know, your iPhone and a boxer at the end of the day. The bottom line is, Tura boys know how to think things through. If EMA doesn't work, Exaliostiek will get the job done. Oh, sorry. Nol ach dri tuye ach 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 fir nol ien Eagle FM. You get the picture. Now, 13 past the hour of 9. I have one more document to go through. That's superpowers. What now? Which is albeit it's losing that status. If you follow a lot of historians' point of view and analysis on the US is slowly losing the its power. For global influence. You know, the superpower status, superpowers or empires. Whatever you see the U.S. doing in terms of bulldozing through international institutions to get whatever it wants for itself or its partners, especially Israel, that's not something new. That's what empires have been doing all throughout history. They bulldoze their way through to getting what they want. That's how empires come to power. They don't come to power by saying, as a belief, may I create some of your resources. No. They just say, hear me in one hand, and if you don't, they say, exile you with my very strong army, stick. Eagle FM. Good morning.
Yes, Helmut.
Yebo.
How is it?
Fine, how are you?
That's right, man.
Please pass the pay.
It's been a while.
Oh, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. So I can see that you're still having your comedy.
I really want to make Namibian politicians laugh and learn. They think EMA works on an international stage. You need the terrorist strategy.
No, I think this time even they are listening because it's holiday.
Have you seen the number of weddings in the north?
Oh, that's the problem again. Yo, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
The number is a lot.
Uh-huh.
Which is true.
Lot are saying I do.
I'm telling I do is a lot there in the north. Remember that the thing is that when you see like a candle like a chain, I don't know how they get it. Right.
It's very simple, Nandume. After that 100 years of humiliation when they were bulldozed by the French and British army, you know what the Chinese decided? They decided, you know what, if we want our voices to be heard, we need to build an army. Then they build an army first. Now everyone can listen to them.
Exactly.
Yep.
That is the proof. Because now everybody can listen to Chinese, what did they say?
Uh-huh. Now everyone can listen to them.
Exactly.
Back then, no one listened.
Yeah, the thing is that I think we African, we are getting it wrong because the division which we are having, which we are not even trying to make people, we think sometimes it might work to our advantage, a small group, like in Namibia.
Yeah.
A small group is working. They can get rich quickly, and the majority are pulling in the pool of poverty.
Yeah.
But at the end, things will be not good. We saw it and we see it everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Except, I don't know, Gaddafi, which strategy he used to get this country where it was before it become somebody mess up. And that is the problem, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know even how the Burkina Bay, they get it right. It's just our strategy. As long as you have a leadership, in the place which are doing marvelous thing with the was, you know, remember one thing that the European country and the Americans, they need us big time.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, please just
App is also something else.
So it's ads that are popping up on the app.
I'm telling you, things which I downloaded, you know.
Okay, go on.
Now they are handing me. You see, the thing is that we need unity in Africa.
Yeah.
And because remember one thing that most of even our black people in defend themselves in either Europe or American, they look down on us. We are not supposed to be that way. We're supposed to be united from Africa to wherever you find yourself. Just imagine up to now, we still people called black African-American. But when a white person comes from America and then settle here for more than 20 years,
mm-hmm.
to be a Namibian, not a Namibian-American.
Or
German-Namibian. No. Why is it to be that way? And that's the problem. I think a lot of people, they die because of they are trying to unite African and the black American and the European. Because, and I think it's growing back. Because if you look now, what happened to like current DRC team, national team, you can tell that things are coming back. People are starting realizing, and this hard time, I think people like 50 Cent and the others, mm-hmm. that visiting Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, most of them, they don't want even to step in Africa. Unless you see them like in South Africa, some of them, they are like Jason now, I think he's having what? A traffic team in South Africa. That is the only way you see that, yes, we are trying to connect
mm-hmm.
back to where we come from, the unit which we used to have, Ubuntu. But the way we are dividing ourselves, no, this is not going to work.
Mandume,
mm-hmm.
our Ubuntu
yeah.
is in the mouth, thereby practice.
It's out of roof. Mm. That's the problem which we're having. Because the moment we try to suppress the minority, it never work, my friend. This is a problem. And we see it everywhere. And this is what is keeping us not uniting to fight the common enemy uh-huh. in Africa. Because the moment you try to work out, two countries are working together, the third country mm-hmm. is sold out.
Okay, here's one thing I like about, the history of every government overthrow. Mandume, if you run for office today and you nationalize the resources, put everything in the hands of the government, oh, you're going to make a lot of enemies. Now, you know,
including the prime minister which you appointed.
And then you will decide, you know what, Helmut, I trust Helmut, so to make sure that I run this country, in a way that is efficient, I'll just surround myself by the people I trust. Then you're like, okay, you know what, I trust Helmut, I trust Michael, I trust this one. Hey, those people that will come after you, guess who they will bribe first? Helmut.
Exactly.
Helmut will backstab you big time. Blaise Compaoré, just apologized, was that last year or earlier this year, to Thomas Sankara's wife.
Definitely.
For participating in the death of his best friend.
Best friend.
Yep.
That is what is happening in Africa. What happened to them?
Mandume, yeah? This was when there were no Vrupas. Now, imagine now.
Now with a Vrupas.
With the Vrupas and iPhones with two SIM cards. You'll be backstabbed by your wife, you.
No, but the Vrupas are running out now. Now there will be no Vrupas in the road very soon.
we're stepping
in the smoke car. Well, you cannot even hear the sound.
Oh, there's a whole electric car. Now, you just fall asleep driving those things.
Yeah, because you don't know if the thing is still moving.
Uh-huh.
or standing.
some of these things.
But then as Almut, I know, Africa, we need to work out our problem.
Uh-huh.
Start from our country itself, especially when we come to tribe.
Uh-huh.
We have to put the difference away.
Yeah.
And this way you... Because I'm telling you, Burkina Faso, they get it so right, my friend. And everybody's admiring them now. Eh? We are doing window shopping at the Burkina Faso. What they are doing in their country. I'm telling you.
Window shopping.
Because if you look, that is what happened. Even they tried to grab the other guy. Then what is this? They accept the money. What happened after they accept the money? They tell them, my friends, whatever you are trying to do to us to follow Abraham Traore, we are exposing you now.
Yeah.
And they use that money to develop their country. You see?
No.
That's how it's supposed to be.
These guys will just take the money and then go to Tokyo.
But the problem with you, with us is we can even talk about the Parapara farm. What happened there? Our boys, they bring the money to home.
That's one thing I like about Namibia.
I'm telling you, but, we are not your kids, man. We have to send it to be a Namibian first before you become your tribe which you belong to.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to comment.
All right, thanks, man.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, have a good one.
Sure.
Yeah.
See, this is why every time I come across a video of South Africans saying, we don't know what's happening in Namibia. Does Namibia even exist? Are there even people in Namibia? I'm like, guys, please be thankful. If it wasn't for us, you'd still be thinking Palapala Farm is a farm. It was us that revealed to you the banking side of that farm. You all had no idea. And you know what's one thing that is very hardcore about that? We didn't even need to use our intelligence. We didn't need to use our army. We didn't need to use our the police. All we just needed is just two regular civilians doing their ordinary hustle, and then voila, secret open. Don't play with Namibia. We may be small, but there by intelligence, we are so good. Commercial break. Okay, just a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. So we continue. So the superpower. Let's wrap this up with me just explaining why what the U.S. actually not me, just Mir Sheimer and Encyclopedia Britannica. This is just combining their analysis here to basically make my job easier. Superpower. Why am I saying that everything that you see the U.S. doing right now is not something new? Is how empires behave. Empires lie and steal to build. Like, literally that's all empires do. If you don't believe me, pick a history book and find me an empire. Actually, I'm open to be told something I don't know. Find me an empire that rose to power and stayed in power by telling the truth and nothing but the truth. People lie in court. The lawyer and the judge, they all lie. Don't be fooled. You know, they, despite putting swearing on the Bible, politicians, when they are sworn into office, they put their hand on the Bible with one raised up and then finish with, so help me God, And then they get into public office, start seeing money, and then the devil starts helping them to help themselves to afford rupees and iPhones with two SIM cards. It's about, so lying is underrated, people. Very underrated. Superpower. What is a superpower? A state that possesses military or economic might or both. I recommend both. And general influence vastly superior to that of other states. Scholars generally agree on which state, is the foremost or unique superpower. For instance, the United Kingdom during the Victorian era and the United States during the during and immediately after the after World War II, but often disagree on the criteria that distinguishes superpower from a major powers. Now this is now if you have if you are familiar with with the historian Mir Sharma's work, you know that the distinction between superpower and major power, that's his language. A superpower is a state that cannot be ignored in a world stage and without whose cooperation the world problem can be solved. During Cold War, for instance, the United States could not intervene in world affairs without taking into account the position of the USSR and vice versa. When the USSR was still in existence, the US thought twice before acting. After the fall of the Soviet Union in 1990, the world became the United States playground, because it know that it's not going to face any significant opposition. And if there's any opposition that's going to pop up, it will easily be quashed and just, you know, move on, because they have the economic and military might. And I'm saying, you know, the economic part is also as important as the military part, because take countries like Namibia, for example. If the US decided to fight countries like Namibia, the US doesn't need to put boots on the ground in Namibia. Have you seen the size of their military base? Have you seen the size of their embassy? That thing is a fortress. Like, for countries the size of the US and take China, for example, if they decide to fight with small countries like Namibia, they won't need an army. All they just have to do, like take the US, for example, is they will just cut all their trades with the US and then convince or threaten or both countries that are also major trading partners of Namibia. The US would just cut its diplomatic and economic ties with Namibia. That will deal a giant economic blow, that alone. And then the US will go to the EU and Germany and tell them to do the exact same thing. What do you think is going to happen to the Namibian economy? Straight into recession. See? No army. Now, for a country like the US, for example, if you see them putting boots on the ground, then that means they are now looking at a long-term type of economic control, which is why Scott Ritter, one of the weapons inspectors of the quote-unquote weapons of mass destruction, allegedly that Iraq had, and then they evaporated after the oil, resources was acquired. You begin to realize, Scott Ritter actually pointed out that because a lot of people were saying that why can't we just fly in, bombers and then bomb Venezuela from the sky? And he told them, as a qualified military man, he told them, look, you are going to drop bombs. Excellent. You're going to kill a lot of people. Excellent. But to win wars, you're going to have to win hearts of the people on the ground. Now, to pull that off, you will have to send in men and women who will have to interact with them in order to change their minds and convince them that we are the good guys. And if you look at the optics, especially if you look at the the reputation we have acquired, we don't have a very good reputation. You have to understand that that point of view, that analysis from Scott Ritter actually reminded me of the beginning of something we all know. Education. Standardized education was started by the Germans. How did they do that? Why, maybe, if we can start from there. It's simple. When Germany was still, well, Prussia, they invaded, you guessed it, Poland. I swear, every time some power-hungry guy take over Germany, Poland is always in the crossfire. Poor Polish. Now, invaded Poland. And they, you know, Prussia was a, you know, Prussia was a superpower that, you know, at this point. They just, well, kicked the heck out of the Polish, and they took over their country. They just had one problem. They had won the military war. How do they win the hearts and minds of the people they just bombed the heck out of? So they decided, you know what? It will be very hard for you to change the minds of the elders if you want to, if you want long-term control of a country. You may want to invest into changing the minds of its youth. That's when they started investing into standardized education. That standardized education worked very well into implementing German ways of doing things into Poland, to the point where it was admired by the then rising country that is known today as the United States. And then you have now your Rockefeller, is it the Rockefeller Foundation? Is it the Rockefeller that adopted the standardized education into America? And now we call it kindergarten, primary, and secondary school. You're welcome. Now, every time you're sitting in the class, and every time you call yourself an educated guy, thank the Germans. I mean, they had diabolical reasons behind the invention of the whole standardized education, but yeah, they founded that whole thing. They founded it. Was that the... wasn't the Rockefeller, was it? But anyway, what you see is, one, empires are about control, and control is about lying and actually cracking down on anyone that questions your authority. That's how all empires operate. Now, to be an empire or to be a superpower, you need two most important things. One, military. You can't go wrong with that one. Military. You know which country had been accused of having weapons of mass destruction? Iraq. And you know which one also is being accused of being in progress of making weapons of mass destruction? Iran. You know which country everyone knows has weapons of mass destruction? Apart from, well, the US, China, France, the UK, and Russia. North Korea. Everyone knows North Korea has weapons of mass destruction. You know why no one would dream of invading North Korea? Because they have an army. Like, on the planet we live on, an army is not optional. It's mandatory if you want to maintain control of your country. You need an army. Now, if everyone was armed to the teeth, how safe would that make this planet? I don't know about safe. I don't know if safe is the right word to use. Nope. And every time an empire falls, it creates a power vacuum. That translates into a bunch of smaller guys fighting for the top position. And eventually one of them wins, and then they become an empire. In the beginning, they are more often nice. China is that rising contender. It's one of those candidates that's showing a lot of signs of taking over the imperial position. But they're very nice. Look, the thing about power is that the the one who is in office, you know, maybe Xi Jinping and his current homies around him, they are going to be nice. But are you sure that everyone that's going to take over Xi Jinping's position 10, 20, 30, 50 years down the, you know, like in case of the US, 200 years down the line is going to be, is going to maintain the non-imperial point of view?
That's very hard to predict. Why? Because people are different. Some are nice, some are just total idiots. And one thing we know about this planet is that it has more idiots than it has normal people. So, again, the Sahel guys, do we need everyone armed to the teeth to be safe? No. But the message the history of this planet have sent is, if you want to make your own decisions, have an army. If you can get your hands on nukes, that'd be nice. Then that makes the world a very dangerous place because everyone wants to get nukes. Because the message that has been sent is that when you have nukes, like North Korea does, no one plays with you. Like both literally and figuratively. So, we're not done. What's more important about making your own decision as a country, this whole self-determination thing? If you just rely on international law, you have so much faith in humanity, I envy you. That's my fancy way of saying you're an idiot. Now, if you want to have the right to self-determination, in a literal sense of the words, at least to some degree, to a larger extent, yeah. You may want to listen to Bro Miashami here. The position of highly superior military capabilities is generally considered to be the most important element in distinguishing a superpower such as the United States from the major powers such as France or the United Kingdom. A robust nuclear deterrence. Like this message is one of those things that makes me go, you know what? I'm just going to live my life on this planet, crack my jokes, have a family someday, and grow old and die. We're all gonna die. It's just what you do in between when you are born and when you die. That matters. The rest is just history. Now, a superpower also draws its power from superior economy, as well as capacity to influence other states in international institutions, which is what's called soft power. Yeah. Soft power is the example I used earlier when I used the North Korean guys that were, North Korean companies that were doing construction here. And we were told, oh yeah, please tell them to leave. And with all our very strong relationship, you know, our very strong stance on enemy to none and friend to all, we decided to tell the North Koreans, well, you know that thing we said about we are a friend to all and an enemy to none? Well, we're not saying we hate you. We're just saying, well, if we don't do what the big guy is saying, we are going to suffer the consequences. So, two things. One, why does the U.S. act contrary to international law and never have to face consequences? Easy. It's because they contribute the most to maintaining international order. Like monetary-wise. They contribute a lot of money. So, have you noticed that the same thing happens in families? There's one of the very funny family meme is that during family gatherings, especially in December, if you are last born and you don't have, you know, if you are last born and you have a fancy job, you have your decisions carry more weight than the firstborn without a fancy job.
I'm going to repeat that again. If you are last born and you have a fancy job, your decisions at family gatherings carry more weight than decisions, than points made. The points you make if you are last born with a fancy job carry more power and influence in family gatherings than points made by a firstborn who doesn't have a fancy job. Eish. Life is more painful when you think of it. No wonder it's just much easier to lie to yourself, because telling yourself the truth is very depressing. Oh, it's very depressing. Because now I'm sitting here thinking, So, the U.S. monetarily contributes the most in terms of money to a lot of international institutions. If you pull someone like that out of your club, chances are very high your club is going to fragment, because it's going to it's going to lack financial capacity. And money is very central. Money doesn't buy happiness. Please, can I have your money? You want to be sad for some reason. So, can I have your money? So, moving on. From the superpower part. Superpowers conceive of their own interest in global terms and directly shape world events. And I cannot agree more. I cannot agree more with that statement. It's all about interest. Did you start a company because you love having employees? No. You want to make money. So, self-interest. Very primary in a lot of things in life. Turns out, again, one reality we don't like to face, but that's the truth. Like, why do you go to work? Self-interest. I want to get paid. I'm yet to run into an employee that goes to work because they love their employee, their fellow employees, their colleagues, and their employer so much that they would even go to work for free, even if it means spending time with their fellow employees. No. I mean, some of them are nice. Some of them are serious pain and behind. Sorry, guys, just trying to make a point here. But, the point is, human beings, we all have some degree of selfishness to us. We all have some degree of selfishness to ourselves. Those degrees of selfishness, for some reason, have kept us alive for like millennia, if you look at it from an evolutionary standpoint. But, you could just try to be nice. And let's see how it's going to happen. In the corporate world and political world, the same thing. Actually, corporate world, political world, social world, they all have one thing in common. We're all selfish. The people that are nice don't make it very long. The same thing that happens in power. And everywhere I look, I see people saying, let's just nationalize our natural resources. I'm like, really? Do you have an army to protect that resources? Because when you nationalize it, the people that were benefiting from it are going to recruit an army, literally, to come and challenge you. So, unless you have an army to defend yourself against a contention like that, because it's going to come. It did come for Mohammed Mossadegh. 1953. It did come for Salvador Allende in 1973. Huh. That's an interesting... Well, that's CIA and 3. It did come for Guatemala. It did come for Ecuador, Venezuela. It's still coming for Venezuela. And by the way, Maduro is not the first one to come up with the idea to nationalize Venezuela's oil. Hugo Chavez did the same thing, who is his predecessor. And Hugo Chavez's predecessor, Perez, did the exact same thing. Actually, he laid the foundation for all nationalization of Venezuela's oil. Now, this is once you lay this foundation that we have laid for the past one day, and now this is the next day because I only have 12 minutes. When I start talking about Venezuela tomorrow, you are going to understand that empires, you know, with the foundation of empires, lie and steal. Oh. Let's get a little... tomorrow we're going to get a little bit specific as to what exactly is going on in Venezuela. Why did I spend 2 days rambling about the political world from an imperial mentality observation point of view? It's because if you look at it from headlines, you are going to miss a lot of things. You are going to think that Donald Trump is crazy, which is not. He's pretty much normal. He's portraying a lot of crazy tendencies, but, well, he's not. He's a billionaire. If he was crazy, he chances are very high he would have sent you an e-wallet of $1 billion by now, because he's not thinking straight. The fact that he have never done that tells you that he's perfectly normal. He's very good at acting like an idiot, though. I want that talent. He's very good at acting like an idiot. But he's not. He's not. In the Christian world, one thing you keep hearing a lot is that the biggest lie the devil ever told was that he doesn't exist. That was an excellent lie. Because if people know that, you know, if you can lie to people that you don't exist, then they won't lie, they won't worry about you. Although that lie did not go very well, because people are still putting salt at their entrances to prevent evil spirits which are tied with the devil, blah, 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 blah. But you get the point. One thing that headlines always leave out is a fact that every event has a historical context. When you leave out the historical context, you miss out on a whole thing. You start thinking that Donald Trump is just this guy that is just woke up and decided. Donald Trump is just this guy that just woke up and decided to to hate Venezuela. No, he didn't. Let me just wrap that up with my... Involvement. That's the key word I'm looking for. Now, I have 9 minutes to run you through, to basically lay the foundation for tomorrow's show. Because tomorrow we're just talking about Venezuela and the U.S. and the whole tension. And then, I want to get that out of the way, because on Christmas, I want to talk about, well, historically, Christmas. Just Christmas. And a bunch of, rituals that are associated with Christmas and where they come from. And the Norwegians, and especially the Vikings, are going to come up a lot. You know, your Christmas tree, your mistletoe, and all that. Mohammed Mossadegh, and the coup. Now, the coup. Coup d'etat, it's French. That means, to strike or to punch. In other words, you are being forced out. You are being couped out. come to think of it, there are a lot of people that have been cooed out of their relationships because of money, due to lack of funding. 1953 coup in Iran, or coup d'etat in Iran that occurred in August 1953, funded by the United States and the United Kingdom, it removed Mohammad Mossadegh from power and restored Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi, the Shah of Iran. And by the way, if you are driving a G-Wagon, thank that guy because he came up with that genius idea. He had so much money. That's one thing about siding with an empire. They make it very rich. He had so much money that he decided, you know what? I'm tired of driving in luxury. But I also want my army also to drive in luxury. So he told Mercedes-Benz, you know what? Mercedes-Benz, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to build for my military a car that is both rugged and comfortable because I want my army to drive in style. And thus the G-Wagon was born. From a dictator, you're welcome. Come to think of it, most of the most brilliant car ideas come from guys with very questionable leadership qualities. Adolf Hitler gave us the Volkswagen. The Beetle was his genius idea. Actually, it wasn't an idea. Chances are very high. He just told one guy that you better make this car or I'm going to send you to meet your maker. And then homeboy spent sleepless nights trying to create the whole thing. But also, when you are in a G-Wagon, just thank the Shah of Iran. So, the removal of Mohammad Mossadegh from Mossadegh and the imposition of the Shah, who will become full dictatorship from day one until 1978, 1979 during the Iranian Revolution, when he was kicked out of power. That is the real reason why a lot of Iranians don't like Americans. Why? Because every time they look at that 20 plus years of their brutal operation by the Shah of Iran, they ask themselves one question. How did we end up with this leader? Because we didn't vote for him. I wonder who put them in that office. Oh, Americans, how are they supposed to like you? Of course, they're going to hate your living guts. And they have every right to. You're welcome. You can't talk about that, it turns out, in mainstream media because it's politically incorrect. But welcome to Eagle FM with yours truly, Mua, on Time Machine. I just read it through. And that, by the way, is a British source that I'm using. I so love my sources because most of them are coming from your honorable, His Highness. Oh, I'm sorry, countries are here. Hey, Highness, the colonizer. Now, the coup in Iran, 1953, funded by the United States and the United Kingdom, it removed Mohammad Mossadegh from power and restored Mohammad Reza Shah Pahlavi as Iran's leader. Some 300 people died during the fighting in Tehran. Now, congratulations. That's hate number one. You're just laying the foundation on this one. Now, with its strategic location and vast oil reserves, of course, it's about resources, people. Iran was a special interest to the United States, the United Kingdom, and other powers. Britain had established a presence in its country, in the country during World War II to protect a vital supply route to its ally, the Soviet Union, and to prevent the oil from falling into the wrong hands. The wrong hands at this point, you won't guess which the wrong hands. I laughed in the middle of the night reading this, I swear. The wrong hands, it turns out that the British did not want the Iranian oil falling into were German hands. Huh? There was a time when the British did not want the resources. Right now, the war that's about to kick off in Venezuela, the US don't want the Venezuelan huge, the biggest on the planet oil reserves to fall in the wrong hands. The wrong hands being the Chinese and the Russian hands. Well, turns out back then, the wrong hands were the German hands. Now the German hands are the right hands. The Russian hands, back then, Soviet Union, they were the right hands back then, now they are the wrong hands. And also, remember, was that last month when Israel launched a bunch of missiles into Lebanon and one of them did not explode, and one of them, you know, these are new bombs, proprietary technology, belonging to the Americans. And it was said that the Israelis did what they do best. After dropping the bombs, they were like, they went back to America. I was like, hey, you know those bombs you gave me to go and bomb that enemy of mine that had nothing to do with you? Yeah, well, one of them did not explode. So if you don't mind, if it's not too much to ask, of course, you mind going back to Lebanon, going to Lebanon and telling them to give you that bomb back before it falls in the wrong hands? I mean, it's your technology. If it falls in the wrong hands, I mean, the Chinese hands, the Russian hands, the Iranian hands, well, your technology is pretty much screwed. So I know I launched the bomb and it did not explode. So I think this is an engineering part on your side. Now, here's the thing. What I want you to do is to go and get the bomb for me. And if you can just fix it in a way that next time I use it, it can explode and kill a bunch of people, that'd be nice. That, ladies and gentlemen, is geopolitics. That is why I like comedy, because it's hard to be serious reading something like that. Imagine me getting in a fight with you, and I have a knife, and because I just finished eating fat cakes and my hands are all oiled up, and they're all greasy, the knife slips out of my hands and then it lands near you. And I go like, you know what? That was not what, you know, what I was going for was staking you. Now, the goal was staking you, and the knife slipped off my hands and then fell near you. You mind handing me that now, because I want to wipe my hands and clean it so that I can maintain my grip so I can stake you this time. Are you going to hand me the knife? Because you'll have to be the dumbest person in existence to do that. So, then what happened next? With its strategic location and waste oil and vast oil reserves, Iran was a special interest route to the United States. The United Kingdom and other powers. Britain had established a presence in the country during World War II to protect vital supply routes to its ally, the Soviet Union, modern day Russia. Now, it turns out they were friends at some point. Now they hate the guts out of each other. Now, the Soviet Union, and prevent the oil from falling into German hands. I read that and I went like, hey? Henry Kissinger was right. There are no permanent friends or permanent enemies in politics, just permanent interest. The rest is secondary. After the war, the United Kingdom effectively retained control over Iran's oil through the establishment of Anglo-Iranian Oil, now British Petroleum, a.k.a. BP. These guys know how to baptize themselves, you know, to change names. Now, this arrangement changed abruptly in 1951 when the Iranian parliament, led by Mohammad Mossadegh, nationalists, and the democratically elected government, voted to nationalize the country's oil industry. It turns out nationalizing a country's industry had never gone well for any leader. Not for Mohammad Mossadegh. Not for Perez, not for Hugo Chavez, not for Nicolas Maduro, not for Salvador Allende, not for anyone. So next time you say let's nationalize, you may want to read this piece of history, please. Thank you. Nothing good happens to a leader that says I want to nationalize. And in 2011, that was BlackRock, your biggest asset management firm. In other words, they hold the assets of a bunch of multinational companies, including yours truly here, I'm pretty sure, BP, and said nationalizing natural resources threatens foreign investment. And I was like, huh? Nothing have changed. Nationalize your resources. You better do it when you make sure, before you do that, make sure you have an army and military capability, economic and military capabilities to defend yourself against the storm that's gonna come. Because, it's gonna come. It's headed for Venezuela right now because of that decision. Yeah. Now, because of that decision, step one, lie. So step one was to label Mohamed Mossadegh and the administration as what? Communist. That was step one. Now, step two, human rights violation, of course. And then, you know, they launched what they call, what the CIA called Operation Ajax. And the U.S. actually, the CIA actually would not admit to participating or being part of that government overthrow until 2013. Now that we have laid the foundation of actually understanding, getting a whole picture of, getting a picture of what's going on in Venezuela, let's talk about Venezuela tomorrow. Until tomorrow, same time, same place. Venezuela, U.S.-Venezuela tension. Yours truly, helmed here on The Time Machine. We look at history and humor. Just mix the two, and I hope you have a good day. Because yours truly here, because I haven't woken up at 5:30 in a very long time. I tried it. It was annoying, but then I like my job, but mostly the money that my job brings. So I didn't have a lot of options. You all have all the best with the next guy. Oh, I think it's Francis Negler. Yeah. A lot of festive season, people, a lot of activities. Drive safe, don't drink and drive. The car is for the bank. The road is for everyone. You don't own anything. Thank you very much. It's my job to always remind you. But thank you for listening.